This is Twit.
So we've been talking about DVDs and ripping them and how that, you know, historically has been a pretty straightforward use case for circumventing a protection measure. And then you mentioned the really interesting loophole, the analog loophole, Peter, of being able to play something and record it separately without any copy protection, and then being able to use that secondary recording because it's not copy protected anymore. It's going to perhaps lose some of its quality or integrity, but you know, in that case, you wouldn't have the DMCA as such a roadblock, or really maybe any roadblock. So against all that, let's talk about these stream ripping services that are driving the music industry crazy once again. The way they bubble up into existence is they're, the music industry has come a long way. They are now posting their own tracks online and generating streaming revenue from them on various services. And they're oftentimes posted with a video. Maybe it's audio with some still images. But the upshot is that if you go to a video service like Vimeo or YouTube, and you're interested in hearing music, even though it's a video service, you can do that. And that the audio track can actually be peeled off of these videos that are available online and that are intentionally put online by the rights holders. But what the rights holders don't want you to do is take those tracks, turn them into MP3s and distribute them, which is what a lot of stream ripping services are doing. So the music industry is kind of involved in playing whack-a-mole with these services. Just recently, a Danish court found one such service illegal and barred it from operating. That one was called Convert to MP3. But there are lots of these out there, and they're a bigger deal than I might have thought originally. A lot of people are using them. Let's see, there's some numbers in one of these Torrent Freak stories in our discussion points. Here we go. There's one that is targeted by the RIAA that I don't want to try and pronounce it. It's flvto.biz. It has more than 94 million visits per month. It's the 322nd most popular website in the world, and 12% of its traffic comes from the United States. So these are not little fringe players. They are definitely garnering some interest in sort of resurrecting Napster, right? MP3 sharing. Yep. So what do you think about this, Mike? And do you think the RIAA is going to be effective against these services? Some of them are based in Russia. Some of them are, it seems like a lot of them have servers in Germany. Mm-hmm. They're going to be hard moles to whack.
I think that's right. I think your analogy to Napster is dead on. I mean, this is kind of Napster 2.0. I mean, clearly mm-hmm. this tool is used for purposes of making unauthorized copies of streams. I mean, not only is that an act of infringement, I'm sure it's an act of in violation of the terms of service of YouTube and some of these other service providers. So I don't think there's any question that this is an act of infringement. There's probably also some DMCA implications here too. Mm-hmm. But I think you've hit on exactly the issue here is a lot of these operators are overseas operators, and it can be very difficult to go after them effectively. But I mean, the RIAA has kind of honed its approach, and over the years, over the long haul, has been pretty successful in stamping out infringing services and other similar types of conduct. So it looks like, you know, they're back at it again with these folks, but it does seem like maybe a little bit more difficult given the overseas component.
Peter, a few years ago, if we had been having this discussion about ripping CDs versus DVDs, there would have been a distinction because traditionally the CDs were not copy protected and the DVDs were. So the DMCA at least wouldn't have come into play as a roadblock. And I think the music industry would have some arguments about that, but they'd be less strong based on the kinds of copy protection that both media use. And there were some concessions made in oral argument in, I think it was the Grokster case before the Supreme Court about, oh yeah, you can rip a CD, but not a DVD, by one of their lawyers, who then had to retract that and go, oh no, we would never make that statement on behalf of the industry. But do you think that there's a distinction now in the context of streaming and stripping out an audio track that is at all comparable? Is it different when we're talking about music?
Well, I think the issues here are complicated. I mean, as Mike mentioned, you have terms of service. So there mm-hmm. are contract issues that come into play that are not intellectual property issues. We increasingly we confront that set of issues. Just a quick digression here. There are a number of exemptions that exist for universities that allow us to do public performances, and they're exempt under various provisions. If we could get our hands on a legal copy that we could use to make the performance, we would be fine. Mm-hmm. The question then becomes, again, in the year 2018, where can you go and get a CD and a CD player to make that performance, right? It's not a matter of, does copyright law allow you to make the performance? It's a question of, can you get your hands on a copy so that you can then go ahead and make the performance without violating the DMCA or the terms of service of whatever streaming service you might be using. And so it's just a question of access rather than a question of copyright infringement as a practical matter for a lot of the uses that we want to make. But coming back to your question about the distinction between copying CDs versus DVDs and now in the streaming context. I mean, in the end, what the DMCA says is there's a prohibition against circumventing technological protection measures. That's the language of the statute. So, for those of us who are in the trenches of this, that's the analysis we go through whenever we're working with, our AV folks on campus, for example, who want to make these kinds of copies. We're constantly having that conversation. Is there some sort of a technological protection measure that we are, making our way around to gain access to that copy? And if the answer to that question is no, using whichever platform you want to use, then I don't think you implicate the DMCA. And so that's, that's the analog loophole that I was referring to earlier. That's one example of a situation where now you may have just because you haven't circumvented the technological protection measure doesn't mean you can just go ahead and willy-nilly make the copy that you want to make. I mean, you still have the six exclusive rights that you have to work through. And the very first of those rights is the right of reproduction. And so you have to evaluate that. But, again, in a university context, a lot of the reproductions that we're making are going to be exempt under fair use or for some other reason. So it depends, I guess, on who you are and the purpose for which you're making the copy. But that's how I would navigate the DMCA issue specifically.